All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Well, hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. It's the podcast where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist perspective. And tonight, we're going to be doing episode 238 of the show, and it's going to be a Gerard Butler, Jamie Foxx movie called Law Abiding Citizen, directed by F. Gary Gray of Straight Outta Compton and Friday fame. I think he also did a recent Fast and the Furious, which, by the way, has been the mematic inspiration for Mike C's most recent album, concept album at mechanicaldreamrevolution.com. Go check that out. But before we get into our discussion of this movie, I'm going to say hello to my co-host and hetero life mate, Robert. How's it going, buddy?
You know, Daniel, things are fantastic.
See, now you sound shit garbage. Your mic's all fucked up.
What did I do? I didn't do shit.
Maybe better now. Yeah.
Why? I didn't do anything, man. I didn't touch
talk
anything.
Into it. Talk into the thing.
Touch it. I'm talking. What do you want me to say? I say hello. Hello, all you beautiful people. All you wonderful, educated, intelligent, super smart, and sexy listeners. How you doing? Happy to be back.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Do you see me? Do you see how freaking tan I am? This is the most melanin, right, that I've ever had in my life.
All right,
I don't know if you
zoom in.
Look at my shoulders.
Look at that. Yeah,
it's
enhanced.
It's like brown. It's like,
and look at that definition there too. The delt muscles just totally ripped. The traps,
just rippling muscle. It's like he's some sort of Adonis kind of a creature.
Yeah, I think you're glistening over there. Why do you glisten so, Robert?
Well, I've been out doing a lot of hiking, Daniel, and usually in my storied past, as a Norwegian person of Norwegian descent,
ginger,
the son and myself, we've not been the most cozy of bedfellows. But lately, I've just been saying, you know what, fuck it, and slapping on SPF 30 and doing my thing and just doing whatever, not giving a fuck. And it's been working out. Like, my skin is bronzing. I might get to a point, and this just sounds crazy to me, not to anybody else. This just sounds like a crazy person talking, but I might take my shirt off and walk around outside.
Whoa, Casper. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Hold your horses.
I know. Tell me about it. This is not something I've ever done in my entire life, but I feel like you can't just have these tan lines. I mean, you could. Who gives a shit, right? But it's if this is working right now, then what's to stop me from just going full on nudist, you know? Fantastic.
I mean, maybe some modesty, maybe a little bit of decorum, but, you know, just throw that to the
wayside. I've heard of these things. I have, yes.
Now, I will say I'm impressed because I'm used to you not only hiding from the sun, but when you can't escape it, being burnt to a crisp rather rapidly and becoming a red lobster, so to speak. So this is new development that you're willing to go out there, albeit with some SPF on you, and maybe that's helping. But you are getting the foundations of what could be a tan.
Yeah, I know. I am shocked because, like you said in the past, I will freckle and I will burn. Those are the two things that my skin is known to do.
You have two speeds.
I have two speeds, freckle and burn. That's all it does. Turns pink and then you get these little spots. That's all it is. But now, and I still get the freckles, of course, but with addition to the freckles is coming some sort of I dare not call it a tan, because I don't think my skin's capable of doing that, but it's something resembling what a normal human can do, which is tan. When I'm really kind of excited about that, I don't know if it's actually protection per se. You know what I mean? Like, once you tan, then you don't need the skin protection and then you walk around outside and you're just like, well, this is fine. I'm totally fine. I don't know if I'll ever reach that. Maybe. I don't know if I want to try that. I'll probably take my shirt off, slather myself in SPF, go about my day, come back all bronze, looking like some sort of a Roman statue of some kind. And then continuing that process, because I just don't trust my skin to behave like a normal human being.
All right. But you are going to go out there and you're going to get some D. And that's the important thing to remember.
Exactly. Some natural extra large D in my face, on my skin, all over my face, neck, and chest as I go around hiking around this great area that I live in, which it's got its high points, which I haven't yet fully explored yet. So I'm looking forward
to it. Okay. Well, I've seen some pictures and it does appear that you are at least trying to get to some of the high points there, which is kind of fun.
There's some serious elevation gains around here. There's some little baby walks for babies with zero elevation gains that you can just take, put a baby in a stroller and push around. But then there are like full on adult hikes where you have like 3,000 feet in elevation and you're hiking for 30 miles. Mm. It's some pretty hardcore stuff. I went on a hike that I took pictures of 8 miles 2 days ago. And I explored about 15% of Whistler Canyon, 15%. And that was 8 mile hike. I mean, 4 miles in, 4 miles back. But, 15%. It's nothing. It's a huge area. All kinds of stuff to explore. I saw bear tracks. I saw deer tracks. I saw some kind of a cat. Probably some kind of it was either a bobcat or maybe a cougar. I don't think it was a cougar because it was kind of a smallish cat. I mean, bigger than a house cat, obviously. So I'm guessing it was a bobcat of some kind. But, yeah, that's pretty exciting, right? Bear tracks and stuff.
Yeah, man. Nature.
The most ferocious thing I saw.
Your own reflection.
I mean, beyond that, obviously when I was taking selfies, that was the most ferocious thing I saw. And at one point I saw my shadow. So that was pretty terrifying, but I did see a chipmunk who was chilling. I hiked up about 4 miles in and then all of a sudden out of nowhere, there's this campground. And then I couldn't see where the trail continued on after that. So I just kind of turned around and went back. And familiarize myself with the trail. And I think I got a better idea of where it actually picks up again. But anyway, that's enough about that. I'm excited to talk about the movie tonight. We've got a great guest and let's get into it.
All right. Yeah. We're going to change things up this week. We're going to have a guest who's living and joining us. So bad jokes aside, we're going to get into the last narrative portion of the show right after this. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Paul Johnson is my co-host and we are the Last Nighters. You can find us on the Last Night or LastNighters.com and also on the Liberty Movement's YouTube channel. We're going to be doing Law Abiding Citizen tonight and this is episode 181 of the show. You can find the show notes more at LastNighters.com/181. We did a little bit of pre-show bonus content available for Patreon supporters. Go to LastNighters.com/Patreon for that. And we're going to be talking about this movie tonight starring Gerard Butler and Jamie Foxx with our buddy who was on I want to say it was September of last year for Gentlemen Broncos. Now this movie apparently was a bit of a troll for him to come on and talk about it. Gentlemen Broncos, that is, but the episode turned out actually pretty good. I think mostly because Robert, my co-host, wasn't there. But we had a good discussion and then Robert came on and did a bonus, discussion covering some of the things that he had wanted to say had he been on, only to lament that we had already said most of the things that he was going to say. So, anyway, it was a lot of fun. And our guest is Ben. He otherwise is known as Dirty J. So welcome back to the show, Ben Dirty J.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming back on and being willing to join us yet again. I know that the first time through was a little bit rough. Robert shied away. He didn't want any part of it. I don't know if it was something he was offended by you or he didn't like the movie. I don't know. But I did coerce him into showing up tonight. So.
That was probably me. I have that effect on people.
Blame it. So anyway, Ben, you were a listener of ours, and so you were throwing suggestions our way way back when, and that's why we did Gentlemen Broncos. And then, gosh, it's probably been 2-3 months ago. You suggested this movie, and I had booked us up probably in February up through about mid June. And so I was like, well, that's a great suggestion. How about mid June? So it's finally here. I think this will be a good one. I like the premise of this movie and, not necessarily the execution, which we will get into a little bit. And I think you placed a bet early on that you thought Robert might give this a higher score than me. So we'll see how that one pans out as we get into this one. But how we start off is with the Google description. So while I'm doing that, actually, is there anything you want to plug or mention or give a little brief bio on yourself?
No, I mean, nothing I could think of. I mean, I think I gave a little bit of a bio last time I was on, and I'm not really involved in anything special at the moment to plug.
Other than being our guest, that's special enough.
other than being a faithful listener.
All right. Well, thank you. We need more of you. All right. So this is, of course, Law Abiding Citizen. Came out in 2009, directed by F. Gary Gray. He also directed Friday and Straight Outta Compton, among other films and music videos. The IMDb is 7.4 out of 10, 26% Rotten Tomatoes, 4.4 out of 5 on the old Voodoo, and 90% of Google users like it. And the description reads, Clyde Shelton, played by Gerard Butler, is an honorable family man until the day his wife and daughter are murdered in a home invasion. He hopes for justice, but a rising prosecutor named Nick Rice, played by Jamie Foxx, cuts a deal with one of the killers in exchange for testimony. 10 years later, that man is found dead, and Shelton coolly admits his guilt. Then he hands Rice an ultimatum. Fix the broken legal system or suffer the consequences. Came out October 16th, 2009, directed F. Gary Gray, as I said earlier. Box office of $127.9 million. And Robert, I'll go to you for your opening salvo.
Yeah, that intro, or that description kind of makes it sound like Gerard Butler was asking Jamie Foxx himself personally to fix the entire legal system all by himself somehow, which I don't think is what Jerry Butler was trying to get him to do. I think what he was trying to get him to do was to behave in a more straightforward manner, to care more about justice and less about his, you know, conviction rate. He was more interested in people acting upright and forthwith than in getting, you know, working the angles and bureaucracies and this kind of crap. He was more interested in making a point to the judge, to Jamie Foxx, to everybody. He was trying to show everyone that this shit is fucked up and that human beings need to act along according to a moral code in that sense, as opposed to, you know, following the rules of the law to the letter or whatnot, or even working within the system and getting like kickbacks and slap hands and, you know, that kind of crap. It's a fun revenge story movie it's kind of a, it's a not conventional revenge story. Like you're following Jerry Butler and you're rooting for him. And then he's crossing some lines and you're like, whoa, 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 pump the brakes here, buddy. Like I want to root for you, but then I'm like, no, you've turned into a monster. And it's funny how the protagonist goes from being Jerry Butler to being Jamie Foxx at some point in the middle. And I guess that line might be different for every viewer. So when he initially kills the two murderers, I think most of the audience is on board, even though he kills them in a fairly gruesome way. People are still like, yeah, he's kind of acting with justice in mind there. But then when he goes on to kill all these other people, in the interest of just making a point, you're like, well, you're killing innocent people. I mean, you can debate on how innocent they are, but you're killing people, you know, in a disproportionate level, right? Like they're probably guilty of some kind of crime, moral or ethical crime, but they don't deserve to be killed for it. And especially not to make your point, which is it's debatable on whether or not it even is going to have any kind of effect. I mean, maybe Jamie Foxx at the very end is like, okay, I'm going to be more of a, going after the bad guy, no matter what kind of a person. And that's about it. That's the entire effect of the Jerry Butler's crusade, is to change one guy's opinion. And maybe he thinks that that is a win for him. And maybe it is. That's, I think that's up to every viewer as to whether that's a win for Jerry Butler or not. But I had a really good time with this film. I enjoyed the strategic aspects of it. You're messing with one very, very dedicated man that has absolutely nothing to lose, and who is super genius, and who has 10 years of time to prepare. Now, I think we could debate whether or not, you know, all this preparation time is really going to be as effective as the movie portrays it. So Jerry Butler has 10 years to prepare, and he's thinking about all these possibilities of the effects of his plan, right? And so he's got all these pieces in place, right? And it kind of relies on, you know, Jamie Foxx doing predictable things. So he goes to a house, and then there's a picture of the news clipping, and that was put there by Jerry Butler or whatever. And you're like, okay, maybe he's going to go there. Maybe he's going to see that. But maybe the character wouldn't have done that at all. Maybe if it's a real life person, they're not going to do that at all. And you would have to, what I'm trying to say is that Jerry Butler, despite him being super genius, he's not going to have all that information, all the changing information over time that human beings change over time. And it's a real kind of, you know, he's portrayed as the super genius when in effect, nobody's really that smart. So you really have to kind of go on a ride and kind of have some suspension of disbelief that this guy is just so smart and he's got everything in place perfectly, even though chances are not, because everything goes right for him, right? Until the very, very end when Fox finds his property with the secret passageway and stuff like that. Chances are a whole lot of more stuff is going to go wrong that he just can't foresee, because one human, even though you're a super genius, you're just not going to be able to foresee because all the moving parts. So, right. And that's a thing of economics that we talk about a lot. It's still a fun ride. I enjoyed the revenge angle, and then the revenge, you know, turning into a monster because he is just committed. He is a committed, but I enjoy the fact that he's a villain that has a relatable point of view taken to an extreme. And those are the best villains. So this was a lot of fun. I got a couple quibbles, but overall, man, I recommend this film. It's great.
All right, Ben, it looks like you're right that Robert does like this one and probably liked it more than I did. And I actually enjoyed the film. And I wonder if, Ben, as a listener, you've probably heard Robert talk about he likes revenge movies.
This is true.
He likes to have relatable characters, and you've got that in spades here. So maybe that's the tell. But yeah, I think that, Robert, to your point about him, there's no way that he could have planned this level of intricacy and this level of detail, without something happening, derailing those plans. And I think you're right. And I think your point is related to the concept of central planning. Now, normally, you know, central planning is related to like somebody trying to plan an economy and not somebody making plans for their own property and what they plan to do. But even in that, you know, you're always adapting. Entrepreneurs are always adapting to changing conditions and things like that. So even on the individual scale, there's really no way that you can plan out that level of detail. Maybe you can plan out like longer arcs, like I want to trend this direction and here's my goal, but it's going to be like a zigzaggy path getting there. And you're going to encounter obstacles and overcome them and kind of, you know, change your plan a little bit, but still maintain the you know, what your end goal, your end state is. But this one relies on everything going exactly, like even to the cell he gets confined in solitary, must be not occupied already. It must be the very one that he has selected with his property that he purchased across the street from that. So anyway, I think it's an interesting premise. And to your point about, you know, what lesson is he really committing to here? I think at the end, yeah, it really is just convincing the one guy. But it almost starts off as he's putting the system on trial, like the system is what the problem is. And at the end, it really doesn't seem like it's the system per se. Maybe maybe the incentives in the system, the way he sees it, it lends itself to these lazy people who are focused more on the numbers and not on truly pursuing justice. So, you know, trying to boost their stats and get, you know, higher positions of power, gain notoriety, things like that. When really, as anarchists, and I speak for Robert and I'm pretty sure Dirty J, you are as well. We would prefer a legal system that is not monopolized, in that there would be what's the right term for it? It's a polycentric law. So it would be, you know, arbitration and third parties making decisions and judgments based on their track record of doing good work in that and specializing in those things, versus this sort of machinery type system that exists now, where they just procedurally go through these steps almost in a rote fashion, totally divesting from the intent behind them. And of course, they overstep all these supposed protections constantly, all the time. And we see that example when she signs off on this warrant that's clearly not legal, but she's like, well, I'm willing to take a flyer on it. And then he kills her with the cell phone gun, which that was, I think, the turn, right? That was when Jerry goes from being the sympathetic wronged guy to being the stone cold monster, at least for me.
Really? So you were okay with him killing the attorney?
Well, so yeah, okay. The guy was a sleaze. I mean,
You tell me, man.
The guy was a sleaze, and it was sort of a it was like a one of those dominance things, like you will respect my timeline or there will be consequences. So it was like a lesson for them in dealing with him, negotiating style. But yeah, he was a bad guy there. Okay. Yeah, I'll give you that. Dirty J, you want to jump in on this, on anything we've discussed so far, or what was the thing about this that was like, all right, here's why I want to do this?
Well, first of all, the reason I love this movie so much is the description doesn't really give it justice. The way I see it is this movie is a live action depiction of every dude's ultimate revenge fantasy. I mean, when you think about it, how many times have you thought of yourself in a hypothetical situation? Like you see somebody getting wronged, like somebody murders their kid or something. And then, you know, you see it actually happen on the news and you're like, oh, if I was that dad, I'd kidnap that guy and torture him to death. And, you know, things like that. I mean, we've all probably thought of ourselves in those hypothetical situations. And this movie is basically
for yourself, buddy.
Well, okay, maybe not then. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like a normal thing to think people think about. But
I'm just trying to distance myself from any allegations here.
fair enough. But this movie is basically a live action depiction of that in the best case scenario. Because I mean, any of us, if we were in that situation, we wouldn't have the resources, the knowledge, and the skill to do what he did. So, like that's why the movie's so far fetched. I think. So, I mean, yeah. Nobody's that smart, knowledgeable, and has that much foresight to make all this stuff happen and have it go perfectly without a hitch, of course, all the way up until the end where they find the bomb and they put it under his bed and, you know, to teach him a lesson. But, I mean, that's why I liked it. I mean, yeah, like I said, the movie's far-fetched. There's some suspension of disbelief and everything, but I just love the premise of it. Like, this guy just goes and destroys. Now, of course, you know, yeah, there is a point where he does go too far. You know, back when I first saw it, you know, I wasn't libertarian minded or anything. I was just like cheering this guy on the whole way. And I didn't even see him as a villain. I kind of still don't, actually. Totally. But yeah, at some point he does go too far, because obviously when you're wronged, you're I guess, entitled to getting basically when somebody does wrong in view, you are justified in getting compensated however you see fit, like justice, like seeking justice however you see it, you know what I'm saying? And that's something that the legal system doesn't do currently. The legal system just it's more focused on punishing criminals than it is dishing out actual justice, because in most situations these days, yes, criminals are going to be punished, but there's no justice, there's no some kind of closure for the actual victims in most cases. So That's kind of why I feel like Gerard Butler did what he did in this case. It's like, yeah, the criminal was punished. The one guy got death row. The other guy served the state mandated, what, 10, like, how long was he in prison? Like 6 years or something like that? It wasn't very long because of the whole plea deal. Now, to the state, that's justice. Wide, it was not. Right. So I think up until what he did to the two people, what he did to those guys, completely justified. Like, I don't think anybody would argue that. Like, however he wanted to deal with that situation, those two guys being the one that aggressed upon him and ruined his life. And it's, I think he was justified.
I think there is a little bit of a difference in the culpability of the two criminals, though. And they sort of play this up where the one who actually did the more egregious acts was the one who turned witness against the other guy and got that guy on death row, when he just seemed to be in on the home invasion end of it. And then when it went beyond that, he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. So he wasn't really there for the raping and the murdering and all that. Granted, he was present during the committing of a felony. So I don't have too much sympathy for him, but it definitely was the other guy who was the more egregious actor. And he's the one who, in that view, would have deserved the more severe punishment. And the injustice in that was that because he was willing to turn against the guy and the state complied with or offered him a deal, that's what pissed Clyde off.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Now, I feel like, I mean, in a way, the way he did get his revenge on the two attackers, I mean, the one guy, he swapped out the chemical and he did die a horrible death, but it was over in a matter of a couple of minutes. And what he did to Darby in the warehouse, I'm sure that was way worse.
Yeah, this is adrenaline.
They made the yeah, despite how bad they made the induction chair look in the beginning, like I think that didn't hold a candle to what he did to Darby at all. So I feel like there's some, even in his own vision of what justice is for the people that wronged him, I think he did dole it out rather equitably. You know, he gave the guy that didn't commit the actual horrible crimes, he let him get off light comparatively.
Right, though not as light as he otherwise might have. I mean, he was still being put to death, but he just threw like a, you know, 2 minutes of suffering in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found it kind of interesting that they investigated that like it was, I mean, I get it, you know, like that wasn't supposed to be what was to happen, so they'd want to look into it. But as like a viewer, you're like, well, they were killing the guy anyway.
Right. But it is messing with their system, and that's something they don't tolerate, right? Somebody has tampered with this, so they probably should investigate something. Maybe if it had happened in some other movie, they would have just been like, eh, he's dead. Case closed. But in this film.
Yeah, well, in this film, you know, Clyde also made very sure to leave some evidence with that little catchphrase, you can't fight fate. You know, he left that at the scene of the crime. So maybe if that weren't there, then maybe they would have been like, oh, well, got some chemical wrong, but oh, well, he's dead. But since they found that there's a little breadcrumb that led them where he wanted them to go. So.
Yeah, he wanted to have them go after Darby, and then he could get Darby to do the escape thing, and then he wanted Darby to get found, dismembered. Like, all of these wheels had been turning for a long, long time to get this all to go into motion. And it's revealed, you know, partway through that this guy is actually like an elite government agent. And maybe that's when he becomes the bad guy.
Yeah, really? He's like a CIA killer. He's probably been a bad guy the whole time.
Yeah, but it makes me kind of like wonder, if he's this badass killer guy, what's he doing having a wife and a kid? I mean, isn't that like one of those things that one would think you don't want to have any attachments if you're going to be in that elite level? And also, you wouldn't just like open your front door and get bashed in the head by a baseball bat?
You'd think so.
Yeah, maybe not.
Did they say he was retired, or that there was something he did formerly, or did they mention him still being actively part of that? I can't remember. I feel like that would have. So like he used to be this guy.
Yeah, it was probably past tense-y. Yeah.
Maybe.
I think so. I can't imagine that he was still doing that for the 10 years. They said that he had a bunch of patents and that he was moderately wealthy as a result of that, and had bought all of this property under various corporations and entities in other countries and jurisdictions that made it very difficult for them to do the paper trail and find his property. That pissed me off, but that you even have to do all this paperwork and filing and divulging of information so that they can, you know, paper trail somebody. Like, it should be nobody's fucking business. And they, you know, they try to do this like workaround thing by getting somebody to sort of cheat the rules a little bit and give up the, what was it, the expense account and the dollar amounts spent in the expense account. Like you're going to buy a fucking building on an expense account. That seems a little like, oh yes, I had a business lunch and I bought a warehouse.
Yeah. Hey, you never know.
Now, Daniel, what did you think about Gerard Butler's point in this movie? Did you think he had a really solid point up until the point at which he was, you know, killing a whole bunch of people? But did you think that, you know, Jamie Foxx should have not made a deal, and that, you know, Jamie Foxx's idea is that, you know, some better than no justice, and he's a competent lawyer guy and he knows the system and he's going to make a deal in order to get some kind of conviction. Whereas Butler's idea is no. We go after them honestly and straightforwardly. And if we get the conviction, great. And if we don't, then we tried.
Yeah. I think to that point, he did want the seeking of justice to take the paramount importance versus the let's do a layup, you know, let's play it safe and make sure that our numbers are good. Let's make sure we get something over nothing. Whereas he's like, no, I've been ultimately wronged. My child and my wife were murdered by two men who attacked and stabbed me. I mean, and I know who they are, you know? So it's like, it's not like it's some mystery who committed these acts. He knows who they are. And so I can see knowing that information and knowing that this guy is going to look for his numbers over actually going after them and, you know, as ferociously as possible within the confines of a monopolized legal system, which has all sorts of flaws. It's a matter of strategy, I would imagine. And because he was, well, it's not like he's the client, right?
It's funny because Gerard Butler's the master of strategy, but in this case, he doesn't appreciate Jamie Foxx's strategy.
Right. But it's also not like Gerard Butler's necessarily the client here, right? Like it's the state versus
Darby. The guys.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it's not like Jamie Foxx is hired by Gerard Butler and thus acts in a capacity to carry out his wishes. You know, like a what do you call that? A fiduciary? No, not a fiduciary, but like there's an obligation to carry out your wishes of the client. There's a relationship, some term about that. Fuck, I'm an idiot. But it is not that relationship. It is merely an advisory capacity, perhaps, that he's even talking to Jerry 300 about this thing.
Right. So in your mind, you were okay with both of their actions, right?
Jamie Foxx doing the deal?
Yeah.
Well, because I, as an audience member, I know that Darby is the dirty one. And I know that, but Jamie Foxx doesn't know that, right?
So he probably knows that, like he said, it's not what you know, it's what you can prove.
Right. I mean, yeah, it makes sense, but I also like the idea of, you know, you're going to go for it. You got to like lay it all out there, especially if it's something that important. And that's the other thing that's sort of, there's a disparity in the subjective value of this whole situation. Who's been affected more? Has the state been affected more or has Jerry been affected more? Obviously Jerry has. The state is just like kind of going through the motions. Oh, we got to show that we have a society here that's built on law and order and there's consequences for bad behavior. And we want to get our conviction rate up so that our guys can get promoted and shit like that.
It's interesting because this kind of thing happens all the time. This, you know, charging somebody with a lesser crime that, you know, you can prove, you know, that they're guilty of, kind of like convicting Al Capone of tax evasion or whatever, even though you know he's committed all kinds of murders and whatnot, but you can't prove those ones. So like with the Derek Chauvin trial, there was a lot of concern among people that he was being convicted of, charged with like second degree murder and third degree murder, when it's like the standards of meeting those requirements were very, very high. So you're like, well, we're not going to get any kind of justice. He's going to get let off on those. Absolutely. So there's a lot of you know, inclination to charge him with a lesser crime to get some justice as opposed to no justice, even though I think, I mean, not to get into that trial, but this kind of thing happens constantly in the legal system. They don't go for justice. They just try to get some kind of charge on people, get them into the system. It is really kind of perverse. And you're right, Dirty J. It's not about justice for the aggrieved. It's about punishing the criminal, but it's like barely punishing the criminal. It's like, get them on the most likely charge we can get a conviction on. That's what we'll go for. Even if we think they're really guilty of these other things too, or this other thing too.
Right. And then the punishment is put him into prison university where he can learn to be a better criminal, because he's going to get out in 5 years and be a bigger piece of shit. But to your point, Robert, where they're doing this undercharging so that they can focus on what they can prove or what they can actually get to stick, I think that's for the subset, the very minority of cases that actually go to trial, versus the other end of the spectrum, the flip side of that coin, where they layer and layer and layer on charges, trumped up, it doesn't matter. They just put a stack of them on you and go, all right, I can make half of this go away if you sign this plea deal.
Yep.
And they get all sorts of people not even getting a trial.
Yeah, the vast majority of cases are plead away. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, and a lot of these tactics, like the one where you just mentioned, where stacking all these charges one on top of the other, getting people to sign plea deals, all these tactics they use are more than enough by themselves an argument for a more privatized legal system, you know, among a lot of other things. And, you know, back on the whole thing of whether Clyde was had good intentions for what he was doing, you know, looking at it more through the lens of an ANCAP libertarian, it seems he wanted to do basically what I guess you could compare him to, like, modern Republicans in that regard. He wanted to fix this system. He wanted to keep the system, mm-hmm. but he wanted to fix it. Whereas all you're doing is you're just keeping this power structure, this system intact. Like, and there's nothing you can do to fix it. You know, he wasn't looking at it through like, we need to just pull the rug out from under the whole thing. No, he was looking at it like, I can fix this. Now, if they would have went further with this movie and showed, well, they did show a little bit of what happened afterward. You know, they showed Jamie Foxx, Nick, he was at his daughter's piano recital and everything, but it didn't show really whether or not anything was fixed, which it couldn't have been. Because yeah. I mean, when you think about it, it's here's what would have happened in reality. Like, say this actually happened today. Some dude did all the stuff that Clyde did, you know, and even if he succeeded in like blowing up City Hall and everything at the end, like everything went perfectly smooth. That wouldn't fix the system. That would actually do the opposite. It would continue the system, but there would just be more measures put in place mm-hmm. that would be a burden on the rest of us.
Yeah, it would empower the system even more so. Because it's been attacked.
Exactly. I mean, I mean, like, look what happened with the January 6th insurrection, you know, where a bunch of freaking like trailer park people went in and kicked their feet up on some desks and then left. And then Congress reconvened that same night, you know, but it was an insurrection, unarmed people, by the way, you know, but then now they're talking about making a January 6th commission and all that other stuff. It's like, oh, well, yeah. Or, you know, talking about putting more legislation out there that's going to further infringe on us.
Yeah,
because you know, we got to protect this institution and everything from stuff like that. So that's realistically what I think happened post what Clyde did in the movie.
Yeah, I think,
you know, I don't think really. I mean, I think maybe Jamie Foxx maybe personally might have learned something from that, but that's about it.
Yeah, Jamie Foxx had like a moment of personal growth. Like, okay, I'm not going to just like do these layups anymore. I'm actually going to go for justice as I can. And on top of that, I'm also going to be there for my family.
Yeah, yes. Yep. That's really about all he took away from it. But yeah. Everything else, well, they didn't show what happened. But I imagine there was a lot of legislation passed after that.
Well, I think that 300's point wasn't necessarily to change the structure of the system itself, but how the actors within it perceive it and approach it and utilize it.
Right.
Yeah.
He's also one thing I like about the Jerry Butler character. I mean, he's not a perfect character, which I'm glad he's not. Well, good protagonists are never like perfect characters one way or the other. They're complex. And this guy, he's a bit conflicted because on the one hand, he's very principled and he's like, no, 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 we seek justice. This is what we do. This is the principle of justice. You, Jamie Foxx, you got to be just a laser arrow right on, targeted in on justice. And you got to be a straight shooter and you got to do what you say and be a straight, right, correct dealer, right? But then he's a very, on the other hand, he's a very pragmatic ends justify the means guy. Like, he's just murdering people that never did anything to him, destroying property that, you know, he doesn't own, that isn't owned by anybody that did anything to him. He's a little bit, I mean, he's just like a, he's contradicting himself in that sense, right? Like, he's creating injustice. And that's one line in the movie, I think, that Jamie Foxx makes, that he's becoming, you know, the thing that they're fighting, or he's doing the things that you're creating, you know, you're killing people. And that's what happened to your family. That's what made you upset. You're just creating more of yourselves, more angry, sad, aggrieved people that now have a right to seek justice against you now. And in some sense, he's like, yeah, they have every right to seek justice against me. That's what they should be upset about. Like the one court scene where he's like dressing down the judge.
I love that one.
She was like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. There's no prior charges. Maybe we should let this guy go. And he's like, are you kidding me? I'm on charge for murdering two people. You're just going to let me walk out of here because I said some magic words. What?
Yeah, though I felt his points were actually pretty good. I mean, I don't know if there's anything to the case that he mentioned, but yeah, I mean, they did not have any direct evidence.
Right.
You know, and you do have rights. You are presumed innocent until proven otherwise, in theory, though I don't know if that is in practice these days. But
right. And they were just playing into his hands to putting him in jail, which is exactly where he wanted to be, which right. is like one of my favorite lines in the movie was, we convinced the other guy he's making all the right moves. That's the brilliant tactician that he is. That,
yeah, the Sun Tzu.
They're playing right into your hands by doing everything you expect them to do. So yeah, I really appreciated that he had the foresight, you know, even though it's fairly unrealistic for him to be able to predict all their whatevers, but you can look at a system and go, okay, they're going to probably lock me up in this jail. And then if I kill my cellmate, they're probably gonna be locking me up in solitary because I can't be trusted around people. And I think didn't he have a tunnel that was tunneled to all the solitary cells? Isn't that right? Is that right about that?
I think there was a one big tunnel and then it led. There was like a ladder leading up to each of the individual cells or something like that.
Okay. All right. So it didn't matter which one he was in then.
But they did need to put him into some solitary cell though. But he was pretty much sure that he could, by stabbing some rando dude, that, you know, they're going to throw him down there. And that relies on them doing that. If they didn't, then the whole plot of the movie is thrown into whatever. You know, if they just decide to keep him there, or if they transfer him to another prison, which happens all the time. You know,
some of these things we have to forgive. Like, they had to script a movie and shoot a movie, so they can't like, oh damn, right. He got sent to another prison. I guess the movie's over.
Movie's over.
Pack it up.
Honestly, I'm looking at myself in that situation, and even assuming I had some of his skills and abilities and everything, the movie, if I was in it, it might have ended at that court scene, except I wouldn't have sat there and, you know, told the judge, like, are you kidding? You're just going to let me go out? And just been like, yeah, just let me go. I wouldn't have done the whole thing where I kidnapped the other lawyer and leave him in a little, bury him alive with an oxygen. I would have just been like, yeah, I'll give you a confession in exchange for something stupid, like a bet or something. And then, you know, go to my court case and be like, oh, yeah, he promised a confession. Well, did he give it? No. Well, then we have no choice but to let him go. And I just walk out and just give him a nod like, what's up, bud? Peace. And that would have been the end of the movie for me, because at that point I'd already gotten revenge on the two actual people that I had a gripe
with. Right, and you would have realized the futility in whatever plan he had and its ability to affect change.
Oh, well, yeah, that too. And I mean, how actually guilty could you consider everybody else in the whole system? Like the lawyer that was representing Darby and Ames or whatever, you know, I mean, was he kind of a scumbag? Yeah. I mean, the judge too. I mean, you know, I mean, yeah, they're all complicit in what happened, but are they really directly guilty of the bad shit that happened to him personally? Like, no, not really. Like, and if there's one person, even if you do kind of feel that he was justified in killing like the judge and the lawyer for the Darby's lawyer and everything, even if you feel those are justified, you got to at least look at what was her name? That little blonde chick.
The research assistant lady.
Yes, yeah, Sarah. She wasn't even in the movie in the beginning. So back when that happened, she was probably still in like high school or just going into law school or something. Now, fast forward, you know, she ends up blowing up in her car because of Gerard Butler's.
Yeah, revenge. At one point she tells everyone she's 35 and that she gave up her family life for her career life. So yeah, she was 25 when it all happened.
Okay, yeah, so she's still very well. Could have been in law school still, then probably right. Not even.
I think she's in an early scene there where he vouches for her, says, "Why don't you let her handle this?" And the lead prosecutor is like, "Well, if she fucks it up, it's your ass."
Okay, so she was there.
Wait, was that? That was before the whole 10 years.
That's just when she was like researching, right?
Right. Yeah, that was the early on scene. That was the 10 years prior. She wasn't necessarily related to the Darty case, but she was like on his team.
Oh. Okay.
Well, he's just killing people.
I just didn't remember seeing her at all in that early part.
She was 10 years younger. Yeah, hard to recognize her.
Yeah. I mean, out of all those people, she was clearly the least guilty of anything. So, I mean, even the most hardcore person who's like, yeah, kill them all. They got to look at that and be like, eesh, come on, man.
Well, didn't he blow up like 5 or 6 cars and kill 5 or 6 people in that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's
some characters we didn't even get to meet, really. And then the other older prosecutor guy or whatever at the funeral.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's a whole lot of murder. But let's talk about a scene that kind of translates well to what's going on today.
I'm down.
At one point, the mayor of Philadelphia institutes a citywide lockdown. Mm-hmm. Wherein nobody can move around unrestricted, as if a mayor of a city has that kind of power because some guy is killing a specific number of people. She's going to lock down an entire city of millions of people. What's she going to do? Call in like the National Guard and like make sure people don't leave their homes. And never mind the, horrific tyrant immorality of all that, and that is just claiming that power.
Well,
we saw it with the governors.
Yeah. Well, we also saw it in Boston with the Boston Marathon bombing. They did that as well.
There was a citywide lockdown in the Boston Marathon.
At least a big portion of the city. Yeah. When they were looking for the guys.
I remember when they were going house to house. I remember that. And like a lot of people were told to stay indoors. I don't remember that it was like an enforced thing. Like if you walked outside, there was going to be some cop telling you, get back inside or else.
Well, I think when it comes to mayors and stuff, I mean, I could be wrong, but maybe there is something to that position where there's like emergency powers that they can only enact in the case of, well, an emergency. Like you said, with the Boston Marathon bombing, you know, there might have been a lockdown with that. And movie, even though it's fictitious, I mean, it could have been based on some kind of reality. But,
they were saying,
I did not make that parallel with the modern lockdowns with COVID and everything. It's like, where are they getting that authority now? So, I mean, they have it. They're making these lockdowns. And, yeah, exactly. That's a good point. I did not make that connection.
Well, I'm an anarchist, and at best, the mayor would be like some sort of honorary title or something maybe. And at best they could offer a suggestion that, hey, there's a guy running around killing people. Maybe be a little extra precautious. Maybe stay indoors if you want, that seems like to be the prudent thing to keep your family safe.
Yeah,
just instead of just like having armed troops patrol the streets, making sure people don't leave their houses.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that's likening it to modern day. Yeah, they should just be disseminating the unbiased, unvarnished data and information rather than crafting it in such a way to make it the most scary thing ever, using fear to get compliance.
Yeah.
Seems to be what they're doing.
Yeah, you know, just like put the situation out there and let the grown, critically thinking populace make their own decisions and assume whatever risk they want, which they could have done in this movie. I guess they could have been like, hey, there's a maniac that's kind of holding our city hostage. You know, he's killing a bunch of people. He's got some axe to grind with us, you know. So we recommend you take precautions and stay inside if you can. But we're not going to force you to do that or anything. I mean, if you want to, go out and about, do whatever. You know, same thing. That's kind of what they should have done with the whole COVID thing. Like, there's this virus. You know, it's got a 99% survival rate. Wear masks or don't. Private businesses, you know, do whatever. Just everybody do whatever. Take whatever risks you want.
Well, it just shows that they think we're all idiots.
And it shows that they think that they're more important than we are. Also, this is a guy who's specifically targeting government actors.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, they're targeting the gods. So clearly everybody else is a massive risk, too. He could kill one of us. Then he's probably going to kill everybody or something like that. It's like, no, he's targeting a specific group of people for a very specific reason. And to equate that to a risk to millions of Philadelphians is ludicrous.
Yeah, yeah, that is a bit of a disconnect in this movie because they make it sound like the citizens are afraid and they need to be shown that they're still in charge, that the city hall is still in charge. But yeah, it doesn't make sense that the population would be freaking out about this because it's not as if 300 was going around doing these random acts that make a threat to your average person.
Right.
I mean, at best, maybe an unrelated civilian might have been, could potentially have been caught in the crossfire, mainly in the situation at the cemetery with the 50 cal and the bomb disposal unit. I mean, yeah, it was stray bullets. You got to think about that, you know, stray bullets. And then,
for sure.
And then at the end, when he was about to blow up City Hall, well, I mean, that I'm sure that would have more than a few completely innocent, unrelated bystanders had he actually done that.
Yeah.
Right. But prior to that, though, all his stuff was targeted, like the phone gun and the one guy that he had buried alive and everything. You know, that was no real danger to anybody else.
Right. So but those people do have families and they are affected, even if they aren't government actors themselves. They are being affected by this violence for sure.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So any other notes before we start getting into some summaries here?
I'm just curious when the flipping point was for each of you guys. It sounds like Dirty J was fine with the first two, but then anything after that, he was, now you've turned into the villain, even though I understand you. Is that about correct, Dirty?
Yeah, I mean, Part of me, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I still would have hated everybody that had something to do with my case. And I might have wanted to kill him at some point, but I'll be like, yeah, it just wouldn't feel right to me. You know, just getting revenge on the two guys, even though it took me about a decade to get it. I find revenge on the two guys, my justice on the guys that ruined my life. And I'm cool with it. As long as I can get out of it scot-free, like, you know, just waltz out of the courtroom and not insult the judge, man, yeah, I'd be golden.
Yeah. Daniel, where are you at?
Well, almost to the point of the lawyer who was a sleazeball and obviously knew that his client was guilty, but he has a responsibility to represent his client as best as he can and make that deal to get him off after the 5 or 6 years that he spent in the joint. And I wonder if that scenario, which was, as I was mentioning earlier, like a power play in his negotiations with Jamie Foxx and the warden, like, hey, you better be timely. Because there are going to be consequences. Now, they did not know what those consequences were, but he said, you better be on time. And this was, you know, to prove a point that he's not to be fucked around with. But also, I think maybe in his mind, it sort of absolves him a little bit of the death because he gave them an opportunity. Granted, they weren't aware of the nature of the opportunity and the timeline. Like, there wasn't a connection of, hey, you need to be timely and here's why. But in a way that maybe like transfers some of that guilt he might have felt otherwise to them in some way. But he's also this stone cold government killer. So he, you know, it's probably doesn't matter to him as a character. But I'm kind of okay with the first two, though. The gruesome death of the guy who was like in on the home invasion. I don't know if he should have had the death row thing to begin with. Certainly the Darby guy was more culpable and more like of an irredeemable guy who's obviously going to do worse shit going forward and would be a threat to be out amongst other people. But dismembering him and keeping him alive throughout the process, that oversteps for me a bit. I mean, he did do horrendous things to his, to Sparta's, you know, wife and kid. So I don't know, man, it's a tough one.
Yeah, it's almost put yourself in his shoes.
You want that fucker to suffer.
How would I feel if you don't really know until that actually happens to you, obviously.
Right. And I don't even know if like watching this guy suffer, you know, like even if he kept him alive for, you know, hours and hours of torturing him. Okay. Is that cathartic? I mean, what have you accomplished really? You know, do you feel better about that? I don't know. Or do you feel like a fucking monster?
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
I guess it's based on the individual. Cause, I mean, apparently that was what he saw as justice. And I mean, I kind of agree with how he carried out his justice. I mean, some people might have been too harsh. I'm just looking at it. I'm like, that's pretty spot on. I mean, I don't feel the least bit sorry for either of these two. Like, what he did was just perfect. Yeah, beyond that, though, you know, killing all these other lawyers and, you know, the young blonde women that had nothing to do with anything. You know, that's just like, yeah.
Nah. Yeah. I did like
you stepped over the line.
I did like the premise or the idea that he was accomplishing all this while behind bars. But then it's kind of revealed that, oh, he's got the secret tunnels and he can get out and do stuff and then miraculously get back in time where they never know he was gone. So it's like, the guards watching his cell must have been the Epstein guards. The cameras must not have worked, whatever, you know, malfunctioned, right. Both of them.
Darkest solitary cell. I mean, right. Not even a light.
But while you're watching the movie, it's almost as if he's pre-planned these things to happen on like dead man switches. Like, he doesn't need to do anything. And that premise I thought was cool. Like, okay, I'm in here and I'm obviously not doing this right, guys, and all of it's happening because he's so perfectly planned it. But no, he was sneaking out and doing it. So
at least he was sneaking out after he got put into solitary, right. That stuff. But the dead man switch on the lawyer, that was all pre-planned, right?
Yeah,
because he had already kidnapped the guy and did the stuff.
And that was part of the charm for the movie. Like the first time watching it, your first time watching this movie, you're like, how? He's doing this, you know, and that's why I love this movie so much, because there are other movies that do this that I have only watched once and I don't care to watch again. Like an example is that movie that does something similar. It's that one quirky horror movie, Cabin in the Woods. You guys seen that one, right?
Yeah. Once you know, it's like, okay.
Yeah, like once you know, it's like, okay, like that was most of the charm of the movie. I literally have only seen that movie once. Don't care to watch it again. Law Abiding Citizen, I've seen it, I don't know how many times. And that's because despite the fact that I know, I just love this movie. I love the theme of it. I even though I know what's going to happen, it doesn't ruin it for me. I'm just watching it like, yeah.
Yeah. You like that revenge aspect, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. What was the movie we did, Robert, that was a Korean revenge film?
I saw The Devil.
Yeah. I think that's the one I'm thinking of. Have you seen that one, Ben?
No.
Right, you might want to check that out. That's a fantastic film.
I saw The Devil.
Saw The Devil.
Okay.
It's good. That's that's another, it's similar in the vein, like a serial killer kills the girlfriend of a guy who's got a certain set of skills.
Oh boy.
And he takes some serious revenge, and it's very, very slow and planned out. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and Robert's not very one intense. For subtitled movies, but he likes that one.
I like there's a couple of really talented South Korean directors that make some really fun stuff.
Yeah, and we did that one, gosh, probably 3 or 4 years ago. So the audio quality won't be as pristine and dulcet as it is now.
So sweet.
But you can give it a listen.
Yes.
I will. I'll probably try to find the movie first, and then I'll end of that episode. You know, I don't want any spoilers.
Yeah, check it out. Check it out. Check it out.
All right. Well, we'll put that on the old show notes page, lastnerd.com/181. And also, we might do a little Kathleen Turner overdrive after this, so people can hit up our Patreon. Go to lastnerd.com/Patreon for a little bit of that. Oh, and one other thing I wanted to mention is we got a review a while ago, and I didn't read it anytime. So it's from a while ago, but do you guys mind if I read it now?
Daniel, you do you, buddy.
All right. 5-star review. Give these gents a try. This is an entertaining and insightful podcast. Listeners get to hang out with two knowledgeable yet unpretentious libertarian hosts and their intriguing guests. Putting concepts through the lens of movies helps to contextualize them in an entertaining way. End quote. So a pretty decent review. Thank you for that. DD90, I think, was how that was signed off. DDE90. So thank you for the review. And if you too want to give us a review, go on to Apple Podcasts or wherever reviews are sold and give us one. And I will try to read it, within the 2 or 3 months after you've made the review, like I did on this one, because I'm lazy.
So good.
And so slow.
So good.
All right. Speaking of reviews, why don't we give this thing a score? Should we give it car bombs or dismembered body parts?
Exploding cell phones.
Exploding cell phones. Okay. All right. So, Dirty J, you want to lead us off with your final summary and review? I know you're going to give it a lot of exploding cell phones. You've kind of already tipped your hand, but.
Yeah, I did. Nothing's really changed. Even us picking this movie apart, I still really love this movie. I'm definitely going to watch it again. Despite the fact that the storyline's a little bit far-fetched. It's not going to be the perfect movie. No movie really is. But out of 10 exploding cell phones, I'm going to give it a solid 8.
All right. All right. Not bad. Not bad. Robert, are you going to raise him or call him, or are you going to undercut him? You going to lowball him?
Well, we'll see about that, Daniel. I have similar feelings as Dirty on this one. It's a very entertaining revenge power fantasy film where Dirty's right. I've definitely had this fantasy before where you are just the ultimate power and that all the machinations of the state or whatever, be it the cops or the feds, or whoever comes after you, you are just 10 steps ahead of them and that all their efforts go to naught. That is definitely a power fantasy because we are all essentially at the mercy of the state. If the Eye of Sauron gets put upon you, right? We are the absolute underdog. The individual is the ultimate underdog when you're dealing with these levers of power. So if you get on their shit list, there's almost very little you can do. So this kind of revenge power fantasy is very appealing. You know, even though he ultimately becomes the villain, you're with him for a lot of it. And even towards the end, you can still kind of feel him, even though you don't think, you know, you may disagree with his methods like I do, and you disagree that he's even accomplishing what he wants to accomplish, at least he claims to want to accomplish. It's still, you know, fascinating to kind of think about and consider that, you know, one person could be so dedicated. And it also is kind of a cautionary tale, right? Like, don't go around messing with people because you could run into somebody who has a certain set of skills. And be careful when you take everything from someone because then they have nothing to lose and they become very, very dangerous. And this guy was combined with his certain set of skills with nothing to lose and a whole lot of time on his hands to plot the ultimate revenge story. And granted, of course, it's a fantasy, but it's still terrifying, right? And it also is a cautionary tale for the revenge seeker. and whether or not you are okay with becoming the villain, becoming the monster in seeking your revenge. What is your revenge worth to you? It's a really interesting film, and it's above its pay grade. You know, it's above its pedigree. Let me say it's sold as like a generic kind of action movie thriller kind of thing with Jerry Butler and Jamie Foxx doing whatever, kind of like a White House Down or whatever, you know, some kind of generic thriller movie. But I think it's a little bit better than those. I think it's pretty damn well made. And even though it's got its little flaws, I could quibble here and there. I don't think Jerry Butler should have made that phone call at the very end when he realized that Jamie Foxx was in a cell. The jig was up, and he should have realized that if he was that smart. But overall, this is a lot of fun, and I'm going to give it 7.5 exploding cell phones out of 10. Just a half a cell phone less than Dirty J. I think it's excellent. I don't think it's quite classic, but it's a lot of fun. Definitely worth your time.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that it's punching above its weight. Like, you expect this to be sort of a middle of the road action movie, and it's a little bit better than that. So I'll agree. I'll agree with that. And as I was mentioning earlier, I do like the premise of it. Like, he's been wronged, and he wants to make a point. He wants to stand on some level of principle, or have them confront the possibility that the system itself is the problem, or more, to put a more of a accurate point on it, I guess, like I said earlier, he's not really saying that the system is necessarily bad, but maybe some of the incentives are bad and the people lose their way in it. And I think Nick has a quote where he's talking to the older prosecutor guy, and he's like, when I got into this, I was really just thinking about justice and doing good. And now that I'm kind of caught up in this game, I think that rather than me changing the system changed me. And that's what his kind of realization is by the end. And if that's all Gerard Butler was trying to do, was to get Jamie Foxx to like be a better lawyer, maybe he accomplished that. He did get his revenge on the people who wronged him the most. And then he also became a monster. Granted, he was already a monster doing the bidding of the federal government, apparently, with his ability to murder black bag people and shit like that. So maybe he didn't really have to become a monster. He already was a monster. But
right. It wasn't much of a shift for him. He was like, oh, this is just my normal Tuesday. Don't worry about it.
Right. And maybe he thought he had given that up after he retired or whatever, if that's what had happened. I forget if he had been retired. And that's when he got married and had the kid and all of those things. So maybe he thought this life was behind him. So it's sort of that Liam Neeson Taken thing where he's kind of like pulled back in, and he's got a certain set of skills, as Robert was saying earlier, to get some revenge and payback and try to make some points. I think his points would have been, I don't know, better served had he not been as over the top and killing a lot of innocent or people who, you know, they're just caught up in the system as well. Like, I don't know what that was really proving to anybody. I guess there's consequences to your actions, which is one of the points he said he was trying to make. But
who's really going to see that? They're just going to see crazy person killing people. That's all they're going to see. They're not going to see. They're not going to know this whole story. Like, his entire plan requires everybody to know his exact motives and understand everything from his point of view as to why these people are bad actors. These people that he's killing are justified killings. Mm-hmm. And nobody's going to see that. Not even the people getting killed or the friends of the people getting killed are going to definitely, who are really familiar with the story of what happened, are going to go, oh yeah, well, he definitely should have killed that person.
Right. And like, how would he know? I mean, I guess he could have kind of known that the judge is going to sign that warrant when she shouldn't have. And so then she gets that immediate, like, you know, payback for that. But how did he know that she was going to use the phone right then? Well, I guess he called the phone, but to arm it or whatever. But I mean, I don't know. It just didn't make sense. That was like a jump scare thing, I think, that moment where she just did this bad thing and then immediate, consequence.
I mean, unless he had a camera in the room or whatever with a microphone, I don't know. He's like basically God in this movie.
Right. Omnipotent, Yeah, he just knows everything, can see everything.
He did have some pretty crazy surveillance equipment that they found down in this tunnel.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I did think that the bomb disposal robot with the 50 cal and the freaking RPG was kind of dumb. It's like, that seemed just, I don't know, like it was like we're watching Short Circuit or something. Johnny Five out in the cemetery rolling around. But, you know, aside from that, I think that the movie was actually pretty good. So I'm going to give it 7 exploding cell phones. So pretty high marks all around for what should have been just kind of a run-of-the-mill action movie.
What did you guys think of him sending the videotape to the daughter? That seemed pretty messed up.
Well, he didn't send it to her directly, right? It was to the household or to...
Yeah, but he knew that there... No, because the guy that delivered it said it was what? Like a... I forget what he said, like a recital DVD, right?
Well, I don't know if the guy said that. I think it was just the little girl assumed that's what it was because they were expecting it.
Yeah, it was set up earlier that he was gonna not make it to the performance but order the DVD. But I don't think 300 knew that was happening.
I would hope not.
Yeah. I think he just planned to send it to him and whoever watched it. I don't know. It's one of those, like, I don't think that was the intention of the plan.
I mean, it's possible, though. You send a video to a household, and if it's not specifically addressed to a certain member of the household, anybody could watch it. I don't know. Yeah. It seemed kind of messed up to me. But maybe that was just on my first watching.
Yeah, he had to have at least assumed that the girl would see it, because, I mean, that's probably... in order for him to set that up, he had to have known that there was this whole recital. He had to have known that, daddy's always away at work and can't come to the recital. You know, it's like he's been watching these people for the past decade or so.
He did.
He might not have intended for the little girl to open it up right away. I mean, his intention might have been like, oh, okay, maybe they'll... Because like say the little girl actually listened to the mother and didn't watch it. You know, the mom was like, no, we're going to wait till daddy gets home to watch it. That might have actually been his intention. Was they're all sitting there as a family, and suddenly a chainsaw to this guy's leg. And
right.
Just kind of ruined them all as a family instead of having the little girl.
I'm not really clear on what his intent was to even send it to Jamie Foxx at all, though.
To get like, caught.
That's a brag,
he could have sent that to the cops.
Yeah.
If he was aiming to get caught, yeah. But I mean, he took every precaution there was not to get caught. Even after they saw it, they're like, oh, he's wearing a welding helmet, and we literally still have nothing on this guy. So I'm pretty sure that was, what was it, after he sent the video? I'm pretty sure that it was after that the judge was like, oh, well, let him go. And then he ruined it by being in contempt of court. I'm pretty sure that happened after the video.
Right. I guess sending it to Jamie Foxx's character makes it more personal because he felt betrayed by Jamie Foxx shooting the layup versus going for the, you know, for the Monster Jam.
Fair enough. I mean, we could nitpick, but overall, good movie.
Yeah. Good choice. Good selection there, Ben.
Thank you.
Speaking of good selections, we don't have one for next week at this point. We were going to be doing Sound of Metal with Rocky Fehrenberg, but he might be delayed, so that could be a couple of weeks out. And then in 2 weeks, we're going to be doing Birdcage with James Gentleman of the Blackbird podcast. So next week, we're not sure exactly what we're going to do. Maybe Rocky will become available and we will be doing Sound of Metal, but perhaps Robert, you and I can just wildcard something and we'll post it on one of our Facebook pages or some shit and people can learn about it that way. But in 2 weeks, James Gentleman with Birdcage, that would be a lot of fun.
For sure. We've had him on before one time. I think it was a great episode.
Yeah, that was High Rise, the Tom Hiddleston flick. We had a really good conversation on that one, I think.
Yeah, buddy.
So anyway, Ben, this has been a lot of fun. We'd love to have you back on. I think we're booked up through September at this point. So sometime in the fall, perhaps. You could troll us again, come up with something that you think Robert's just going to fucking hate, and we'll do it. Or give you another one that's a bit of a gem, like this one. I think that this one has some merits, and it's worth watching, and I'm glad that you suggested it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll definitely try to come up with something else down the road. I'll just go through y'all's catalog again, make sure you didn't already do it. that's actually how I selected this one. I'm just like going through every episode, and I'm like, huh, like that's weird. I could have sworn they did one on Law Abiding Citizen. I'm like, oh my God, they didn't. Hell, that was when I suggested it.
All right. Yeah. Well, I actually did just update the listing. So I had been about 6 weeks behind on that because, again, I'm lazy and behind on everything. But yeah, something in the fall we will be happy to do with you.
Absolutely.
All right. So, Robert, any final words for people, things they can do to support what we do here or make you happy, make you a happy man, send suntan, baby tan, Hawaiian tropic your way, something like that?
You know, just because I look so good in a tan these days, you don't got to make fun of me, Daniel. It's just, I know you're jelly. Don't maybe get too jelly.
Hula skirt and some coconut brassiere.
Maybe just a Hawaiian shirt. I can go full on boogaloo. Booyah. Boog. Yeah, you can support the show by leaving a review. That's a lot of fun. You can leave a like on a YouTube video. You could subscribe to the channel. You can just subscribe and download all the podcasts on all the devices. You can just over-download it. I don't know if it does it count as another download. If you download it, delete it, download it, delete it, download, delete it. You just keep doing that. Bump up those numbers. Those are rookie numbers. That's how you can, yeah. Support the channel. Get out somewhere in the summer. Go have a good time. Get outside. Get after some life. Get busy living. Get busy dying. You know, that's what you can do to support the podcast this week. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back next week with I don't know what, but it'll probably be pretty a strong performance. That's all I can promise. We'll try our best.
Always. It's always our best. And you can find the show notes more for this now best episode at lastnightofs.com/181. And we'll see you guys all next week for Mystery Movie Day. So we'll see you guys then. And say goodnight from last night, everyone. Peace out. All right, and just a few more minutes on the Actual Anarchy podcast before we get into the Kathleen Turner Overdrive, which is the bonus content where we shoot the shit a little bit longer with our guest, and who knows what happens at that point. But Ben, I think that this was a really good movie. Is there anything that, now that we've wound down the review and ended the Last Nighters portion, that you're like, I wish I had said? Do you have any wish I saids?
Just a couple of scenes from the movie that I know we didn't touch on, and I'm assuming you guys probably know exactly which ones I'm talking about and wanted to save them for this. One of them being the part where Nick and what's his name, Detective Dunnigan, were going out and looking at his properties, and they're like, oh no, it's locked.
Mm-hmm.
He pulls out some bolt cutters, and you're like, well, what about his civil rights? And he's like, civil rights, and then they're like, and just cut the lock and help themselves. Now, so I'm just curious, what do you guys think about that being a blatant violation of his property rights?
Well, at that point in time, with all the information they had, I think that they were acting in their own best interest and in the defense of another to prevent more murders. I mean, if we honestly, if they're, you know, I think I've mentioned this story before, like Todd McFarlane, the Todd father, the writer and creator of Spawn, he's told stories where, you know, if there's a rapist or a murderer running around the neighborhood, sooner or later, you know, he's just going to get together with a bunch of other dads, and then there just won't be a rapist or a murderer running around the neighborhood anymore. And that's just going to be it. And they're going to sleep better at night knowing that they took care of the business. At some point, even if they are culpable in the creation of this monster, at some point, I think you have to stop the bleeding. You have to perform the triage. And for them, they saw that the violation of his property rights were trivial because he had already murdered a whole bunch of innocent people. He had already violated their property rights. He had already shown that he doesn't give a shit about property rights, because he'd murdered a whole bunch of innocent people. So he had given up. He had voluntarily given up any concept of property rights for them respecting his property rights at that point. And they were just breaking in and doing anything they could to prevent further death. So I was totally on board with Jamie Foxx's actions at that point.
Yeah. I would tend to agree. And oddly enough, this is where Jamie Foxx demonstrates that he has learned the lesson that Jerry Butler wanted him to learn. That you're not just going to let him say some incantation and walk away scot-free when you know damn well that he's guilty. But this was an unforeseen or unplanned thing because he, of course, did not expect that Nick and the detective would find his property records and know that it's his property. But it is an action that he would have wanted Nick to undertake. Like, you don't go by procedure, you go by your gut and by what is right and versus what is wrong. So in a way, teaching him the lesson is what got him to actually have Nick break into there and catch him.
Absolutely. I agree.
Thought about his own downfall.
Yeah, I mean, definitely given the situation where this guy has already killed a bunch of people and destroyed property and everything, I feel like, okay, no reasonable person is going to be like, hey, you can't do that. He has property rights. But what if it was a different situation, though? Like, what if there was a guy that was just suspected of something horrid? Like he didn't have this guy. Like, say there was like a suspected rapist or something. Just suspected. Nobody knew. He'd never been to trial or anything, but they come up across like a shed in his backyard and they're like, oh, we think he might have, you know, pictures of the little kids he's raped in here or something. And they, like, do you think they'd be justified in breaking in then? Now, whether or not they found anything, do you think they'd be justified?
I think that everybody should be held like Jamie, like 300 says in the movie, they should be held responsible for their actions. So based on whether or not you think he's guilty or not, you are going to either break into that shed or not. And if you're right, then hooray, you were right, and you helped catch this rapist. But if you're wrong, then you broke into an innocent guy's shed, and then you'd be guilty of violating that property, absolutely. I think it's about as clear-cut as that. You take that risk, right? When you're not sure about something, and if you're right, great. If you're wrong, then you're guilty.
Well, that's the unfortunate thing about the system we have today, though, is how much risk really is there. Because, I mean, I'm in agreement with you guys. Like, if there's even some suspected thing, like if you're like, okay, we're pretty sure we think this guy's a rapist and we think he's got some shady stuff out in that shed of his. Well, they break the lock, violating his property rights. They go in there, they find nothing. Okay, let's say they find, like, yeah, he's got pictures of all the little girls and a bunch of trophies on the wall. They're like, bam, got him, completely justified. They took down a rapist. Now, they open the shed and it's just nothing but tools, like still nothing incriminating on this guy. Like they can't find there's like not a shred of evidence against this guy. So maybe he is actually an innocent dude. Yeah, they're gonna break in and in today's system, what actual like punishment is there gonna be for that? You know, like say they even went and got a warrant. Like what even is a warrant anyway? It's just a piece of paper from one person in the government giving another in government permission to do this, to violate these people's rights. Like, I don't think there's a lot of, if any, any punishment for that. Like, if they break into somebody's thing and they find out, oh, there's nothing there, then it's just like, oh, whatever. And that's a really good case against a non-monopolized, more free market system of justice where, yeah, you're going to have people breaking in and violating people's property, but they're more likely to be held accountable for that violation when they're not some big government-owned monopoly doing that, you know?
Right, that's, yeah.
100%.
I don't like the idea of a state being empowered to do these things, especially scot-free. I mean, the intent behind a warrant is sort of the idea, the concept is kind of nice. Like, it's supposed to be, you know, reasonable suspicion and describing the place and nature of the search and the nature of what you're looking for. Whereas I think it's, I don't have direct experience with this, but it seems to me, just in the cultural zeitgeist, that it's now more of a blanket kind of rubber stamp kind of thing where they just kind of use it as a means to go and look at whatever the fuck they want and take whatever they want.
Right. And to Dirty Jay's point, there's no consequences. Like even when cops break into somebody's house and like it's the wrong house they break into, and then they end up murdering the dog and they murder somebody else in there, and then a news article will come out and go, well, they broke into the wrong people's house. Oops. And then there's no consequences. Maybe some cops, you know, they get paid vacations and there's like some formal you know, investigation that they quote,
investigated ourselves.
We made an oopsie and, you know, our bad, but nothing really happens. You know,
even if there's like a settlement, they're not paying it out of their funds.
It's right. Right. It's off the taxpayers pay it. Right.
Yeah.
So there's no real consequences for these things. To Dirty Jay's point, if there was a competing system where you could support something or not, you could withdraw your support from the bad actors and support the good actors.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know I kind of strayed away from the actual movie with this one because, you know, obviously in the context of the movie, like I said, you have a guy that's already killed a bunch of people and they're 99.9, if not 100% sure that this guy's guilty. So, you know, it's not like even if they did break in and found nothing, it's not like there's going to be any sort of consequence either way. And nobody would really expect there to be what he's actually guilty of. I mean, oh, you broke into this guy's shed and you didn't find any sort of secret entrance. It was just a bunch of cars and stuff. And they're like, oh, well, whoops. I mean, there wouldn't be any consequence. And in that context, you wouldn't expect there to be.
Yeah. And in the movie, you know,
like in real life, when they execute warrants all the time, and it happens in movies too, but you'll see cops go into a house and trash the place, not find anything, and just be like, oh, and leave. And it's like, well, have fun cleaning up all that shit we just broke and all the crap we just threw about everywhere. Like, as if, like, well, we don't have to clean it up and fix everything and make you whole again. We're just doing our jobs, just busting up the place, looking for shit.
It just reminds me of this one little video clip I've seen in memes and stuff where it shows, like, you see somebody doing something wrong, and then there's like this one little stock video clip where you see like FBI agents just dropping in from every angle, smashing through windows, and just like grabbing like a random vase and smashing it on the wall for no real reason. You guys might know what video I'm talking about. I've seen it a million times. But it's just, I don't know. It just made me think of that. Like,
no, I haven't seen like, that, but yeah, that's.
I'll just send a link. Try to find it and send a link.
Yeah, send it. And I'll put it on the old show notes page here, which. What is the show notes going to be for this one? It's actualanarchy.com/what 238. Yeah, that's this episode here on Law Abiding Citizen. Well, hey, we should probably wind it down here. We've been going pretty long. We've been doing a lot of longer episodes lately. We're supposed to be about an hour, but we're constantly going well over that. Any final points that either of you guys want to bring up? We can go a little longer. It's fine. Get a warrant.
We've gone through my notes. It's been a fun episode. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. I got nothing else.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I will bring up one thing. I did enjoy the scene where he offers the confession and this experienced lawyer is like, oh, I got you now. You told me everything. And he's like, no. I said, I thought about doing this. And, you know, he worded everything in such a way to where it technically isn't a confession. I found that a little bit unbelievable in that I would expect that an experienced lawyer of the caliber of Nick's character in this, he would have been like, no, I need you to say very explicitly, yada, yada, yada.
X, Y, and Z. Yeah. I found that a little bit unbelievable as well. For somebody like in Jamie Foxx's character to have been in the game for over 10 years to not know exactly what he needed for a conviction, for an actual confession. Yeah, that seemed a little bit on the unbelievable side.
It seemed like he tried to save it later on when he actually was giving his confession. And he says, he's like, yeah, I actually killed him. And then he just kind of looked at him. He's like, fine. I, Clyde Sheldon, murdered. Like, he had to spell it out for him. That by then, it's like he learned his lesson. But yeah, I feel like in that beginning, that first scene, yeah, he should have caught that. Yeah, like, I think even I caught that the first time around. Like, I didn't know he was going to pull that. But even I thought something was a little shady about the way he worded it. I'm like, thumbs up with that.
Right. And then I don't know if I mentioned this before, but when you were saying that he knew that the family would maybe watch that video together, he reveals in this interview, this confession interview, when he's telling Nick to sit back down, he's like telling him all these details, like, oh, you're going to go pick up your daughter at 4:30 from this place, or your wife's going to be coming home from, you know, taking this street or whatever. Like, he had been surveilling them. He'd been watching them and studying them for a long time. So he was demonstrating that he knew a lot about what was going on in Nick's life and all those things to get him to come and sit back down. So I think to your point, like, that helps with the planning aspect, and that he knew that Nick, at least Nick, would be watching that video, if not the rest of the family.
Yeah, I mean, Like I said, he probably didn't care who actually watched it. I mean, I'm pretty sure he assumed that either at least one member of the family or all of them were going to watch it at some point. I don't think it really mattered.
Yeah, as long as Nick knew about it.
Yeah, yeah.
He's trying to rattle him a little bit, make it personal. But
yeah, that's enough to stop anybody in your tracks, too. I mean, if somebody just starts spouting off personal information, like, yeah, you're going to go pick up your daughter from her recital at 4 p.m., like, yeah, that struck a nerve. How did you know?
Yeah.
Talk yep. for a minute.
Well, Ben, this has been a lot of fun. And again, we'd love to have you back sometime in the future. And audience, we'd love to have you back as well, even though we don't know what we're doing next week. But do be sure to tune in and join us. You can send money our way at Patreon. Go to patreon.com/actualanarchy. Give us reviews on the old podcast websites. I think Apple Podcasts is where we've been seeing most of the reviews. You can subscribe to us on the old YouTubes. You can go to Trubster.com and buy some merchandise that Robert has designed and lovingly crafted with his bare, now almost tanned hands. So you can get in on that at TRUBBSTER.com. And we will see you guys all next week for Mystery Movie Night. And with that, we'll say maximum freedom, everyone. Peace out.
Chipmunks. C-H-I-P-M-U-N-K. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do-do. Do-do-do-do. Do-do. Do-do-do-do.